So she'll be joining hopefully in a few minutes or seconds.
Thanks, Julie. Morning, honorable members. Morning, honorable members.
Morning.
Can we start our meeting? We are 4 minutes late. I wish to apologize for that. Good morning, everyone and officials in the meeting.
Morning, Chair.
I will try and cover up the 5 minutes. But I think the volume that is very low to me. Okay. Can we please bow our heads where we are for a minute? Thanks ever so much. The meeting has been opened officially. I just want to welcome everyone in a meeting, my colleagues and also the officials. And even if the stakeholders are present, I know for a fact that the minister and the DM are supposed to have connected, but the DM apologized for the meeting, but I suspect that the minister is with us. Is that so,
Lynn? Yes, Chairperson, good morning. I am here.
Morning, thank you ever so much. I'm gonna be very, very prompt in terms of time. I've missed the 4 minutes and 5 minutes, but I will try to cover it up. Really apologize for that. I know for a fact earliest should be 10 or past 10, but 10:30 the meeting will have to adjourn. Minister, do you have anything for us? Can I give you a little flight the agenda first? Thank you, Yoli. Scroll up, Yoli. Can you assist us, Yoli, by telling us that do we correct for the meeting?
Okay, Chairperson, good morning to you, to Minister and members and my colleagues present. Yes, Chair, I can confirm that members in meeting, it's you, Chairperson. Is Honorable Manganye, Honorable Stock, Honorable Abrahams, Honorable Mfikwe, Honorable Iris, Honorable Masango, Honorable Kate. So all in all, Chairperson, you are 8 members. So you can make decisions, take decisions, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I just go to the apologies as well while I'm here, Chair?
Okay.
Yes, Chair. We have apology from Honorable Priyat.
Minister, mute your mic.
Okay, we have apology from Honorable Briat Chair. We had prior commitments. Honorable Fanda Merve, she says she's on the flight. She will join as soon as she lands. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson.
Thank you.
Please note the apology of Honorable Ponita Marie. She's in hospital.
Oibu. Sure. When is that?
She did go in yesterday. She didn't feel well the whole time, so
she decided to go.
Yeah, she's admitted to hospital.
Sure. Thanks ever so much, Honorable Aris, by joining. You were not sure whether we'll be able to join today or not, but thanks ever so much. And as a committee, we really want you to pass our speedy recovery to Honorable Paul Meat. We will also try as colleagues and officials to send a speedy recovery message to her.
Thank you.
God will be with her always. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable, by informing us that. Then can we go to officials' apologies? None. Thank you very much. Minister, do you have something to say before? Oh, let's adopt the agenda as it is. Honorable members, let me remind you, it's questions and deliberations to SASSA, and then questions and deliberations to NTA. Can I get someone who move and adopt the agenda?
It's Bridget, Chair. I would like to move for the adoption of the agenda. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bridget Masango. And any seconder?
Yes, Chair. Jane Mangani, I'm seconding.
Thank you, Honorable Mangani, by seconding the agenda. Let's continue again with the agenda. The agenda has been adopted as agreed before. Then can we then check with Minister?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and a very good morning to all honorable members. We're back again and we thank you for this opportunity. I don't want to be making any comments, Chair. Can I just ask the department, DSD and NDA through the acting DG to tell us how they're going to be packaging the questions because they quite a lot. And when I look at the time, I'm thinking let's cover as much as we possibly can. But at the same time, I'm thinking let it not be one unit that answers because we've got all of us here. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Minister. Acting DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning to yourself and Honorable members, and good morning to Minister and colleagues. Thank you. I want to confirm we did indeed receive the questions that were flowing from the presentations that were made day before yesterday. How we will approach the responses, Honorable Chair, and it's quite a lot of questions, so some do cut across, some are some questions that we may have responded to already, but we will do our best to respond to all of these. What we will do, we will start with the NDA in terms of the responses and the colleagues, both the CEO, the CFO, and the colleagues, the executives from the NDA would go first. They would not mention the names of the members, but they would respond to the questions as they have them listed. Immediately after that, Honorable Chair, I'll ask them the CEO of SASSA, the CEO of SASSA, the CFO, as well as the executives to also respond to the specific questions. So that's the approach that we thought we'd take. And then, of course, we would come in at the tail end after the colleagues have responded. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. If that,
recording in order, in progress.
I will then ask the CEO of the NDA through yourself, Mr. Makongo, to come in and respond. Colleagues, my suggestion is that we don't preambles to the responses, we provide the accurate responses to the questions asked. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Acting TG. Let's shoot straight to the process that has been outlined by Acting TG.
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Makongo, you are on the floor through the chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Honourable Members and Acting DG and CEO of SASSA and colleagues. The questions that related to finance, there are a number of them. I will request the CFO to respond, the CFO and the financial manager. I just want to make an apology for the CFO chair. She's here in the meeting, but she just lost her voice in the past 2 days, 3 days, in fact. So those questions will be responded to by the CFO. The questions that relate to programs, CARA and CSOs.
Excuse me, Mr. Makong, who has lost her voice?
The CFO.
CFO, okay.
Yeah, okay. Ms. Muthen. But she's in the meeting.
In the name, the voice will come back whilst we're holding the meeting.
No, this is the financial manager will deal with those questions because he presented. The question that relates with CSOs, CARA, and volunteers, the Ms. Kumalo, our COO, will deal with that. And the questions on strategy, turnaround strategy, and performance information, Mr. Marula will deal with that. And the questions that, the rest of the questions, I'll deal with them myself. If they can start in that format.
Excuse me, can I just come in quickly?
And who are you?
Yoli Sacha.
Oh, Yoli?
Yes, I've just been alerted that the meeting is live. So members or speakers are requested to switch on their videos if possible when on the platform. Yes, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much for informing us. Maso's bones, let's have a second to ponder ourselves and put on lipsticks and everything. Thank you ever so much. You have had honorable members and officials about switching on your videos. Thank you. Continue.
CFO, you can go ahead.
And thanks, CEO, and good morning, Chair and Minister and members of the committee. I will start with the questions related to the finances. I will start first with the question. I think question number 13 that speaks to slide 23 that talks to unutilized third party funds of 35.7 million that decreased by 28.9 million on prior year. And the question there is, why did the NDA return the funding from that we had received from Gauteng DSD to implement a program on their behalf? So in terms of the Gauteng funds, we had received funding from Gauteng DSD to implement a farming program in Gauteng. And I think after the SLA was signed, there were challenges with the obviously with the some of the conditions that were placed on the contract in relation to the implementation of the program. When we referred the matter back to the province, they could not resolve some of the issues. And I think there was an amicable agreement that the department will take back the funds and try to sort out the issues that the NDA had raised that may have resulted in process issues. And some of them may have had the potential of the NDA, I think, being found not to have complied with its own processes in terms of grant funding. So that was the reason why the funds from Gauteng DSD were returned to the department or to provincial DSD in Gauteng. Then the question that relates to slide 25 that reads, mandate cost increased by 2.6 million due to the 2021 cost of living increase, offset by postponement in the filling of vacancies or late or early in the year. I think in terms of the salaries, I think as an organization, every year we budget for increases based on the guidelines that we receive from National Treasury, and over and above that, we negotiate with them. We enter into negotiations with the trade unions to in terms of negotiating increases for those employees that sit in the bargaining unit there. So so basically the increases number one are due, obviously, due to the increase in the staff cost is due to obviously the annual adjustment in the salaries. Plus, also, I think we must also remember that if in the previous financial year you had some positions that were vacant, and in the current financial year you fill some of them, obviously, then there will be a slight increase in the mandate staff costs compared to the previous financial year, because now you have filled some of the vacancies that may have been vacant when you closed the 2021 financial year, and when you during the 2022 financial year you fill some of the positions that that were vacant in that year. And there's a question that speaks to slide 23. That the NDA spoke to 5.3 million bonus with reference to slide 25 and 23. Is it correct to say that staff got increases and bonuses at the department, bonuses, increment of being a CEO-less entity? This appears as if the NDA is deliberately not appointing a CEO, as well as filling other senior critical posts in order to benefit financially. So in relation to the amount that is sitting in our financial statement as a bonus, it's a provision. The bonus has not yet been paid out. And I think the members are correct in terms of our performance management policy. As soon as a financial year is concluded, staff have completed their performance assessments. They go through an internal moderation process. And after the internal moderation process, EXCO recommends to the board. And I think because of the absence of the board, the performance bonus issue has not yet been finalized for those two. So the amount that we are seeing in the income statement and the balance sheet is a provision. So we are raising a provision so that by the, if the board were to approve it, then the bonus will be paid. If the board does not approve, then the bonus will obviously not be paid. So the declaration of a bonus is the prerogative of the board at the end. I think we must also remember that the NDA during the 2021-22 financial year did not have a board, but the Department of Social Development and the National Treasury had approved an interim accounting authority that was performing the function of the board in the absence of a fully appointed board. So that was the arrangement that was in place, and the issue of the performance bonus has not been finalized as it's being taken through the approval processes. So once the once those processes are completed and the board or the interim accounting authority decides whether the NDA is entitled to a bonus or not, only then will the bonus provision that is paid, that is reflected in the annual financial statements, be paid out to staff. And I think those were the issues, I think, CEO, that related to the to the annual financial statements. And I think those are the I think the responses in relation to the questions on the annual financial statements, and Chair and CEO. I will, I think for now, then I'll hand it back to the Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Shingange. COO.
Okay,
Ms. Kumalo.
I am here, CEO. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, members, minister, and colleagues. I'll be responding to the questions that relate to the program performance information of the NDA. The first question relates to the list of stakeholders that secured funding from the NDA. We are looking at the grant funding CSOs that received funding from the NDA. The list can be shared through a submission, but we funded 88 CSOs during the 2021-2022 financial year. And I don't think I'm expected to read the list at this moment. But in terms of the numbers per province, from KZN, 25 CSOs.
Ms. Kumalo.
Yes, ma'am.
Remember, we were requested that the meeting is live, ne? So we must switch on our videos. Where's yours? Is it me that doesn't see yours?
And the reason why I'm not switching on, ma'am, I'm sorry for that. Once I switch it on, the connection will be cut off because where I am, the network is poor.
Just switch it on so that we see your face and then switch it off when you speak. Just for the network, this thing that they said it's live. Even myself, I'm going to switch it off after you have spoken, and exactly we'll do that.
Okay,
thank you so much.
I have switched it on. I don't know if. It is on, Chairperson.
It's not.
I have switched it on from my side.
But we can't see you.
I think it is the problem of the poor network, ma'am. But it is on.
Carry on, continue, but we don't see you. It's not on our side, but continue. Yeah. But uvela kancane mos. Uvelile marwa vela kancane ushonile.
It's the network, ma'am. I'm sorry about that.
It's not the network. It's the way that the position that you have switched on.
Okay, sorry about that, ma'am.
Continue.
I was saying that we funded 88 CSOs through our grant funding program, broken down as follows. From KZN, we funded 25 CSOs for an amount of 2.8 million. From the Eastern Cape, 12 CSOs for an amount of 1.7 million. From Free State, 11 CSOs for an amount of 2.09 million. Limpopo, 10 CSOs for 1.4 million. Northwest, 8 CSOs for 1.9 million. Mpumalanga, 6 CSOs for 1.1 million. Northern Cape, it's 6 CSOs for 442,000 rand. For Western Cape, it's 5 CSOs for 1.2 million. And from Gauteng, it's 5 CSOs for 409,000 rand. The next question is on the number of community members that received the training and skills development from the NDA. We had an annual target of 1,800 CSOs to be capacitated during the financial year. However, we managed to capacitate 2,558 CSOs throughout the country. In KwaZulu-Natal, we capacitated 436 CSOs, in Limpopo, 327, Free State, 306, Western Cape, 289, Eastern Cape, 266, Northwest, 264, Gauteng, 263, Mpumalanga, 235, and Northern Cape, 172. And the programs which we focus on in our capacity building sessions is project management, financial management, conflict management, resource mobilization, compliance with legislation for both NPOs and cooperatives, and the relevant acts like the Children's Act and NPO Act to make sure that our CSOs are compliant. There was a question on how the NDA tracks performance of targets in provinces. We do it, we utilize different monitoring mechanisms to track performance. The first one is through submission of the standardized monthly, quarterly, and annual reports. We also provide monitoring oversight visits to provinces. These are conducted by respective senior managers and executives. We also conduct quarterly review sessions, which are held at the end of each quarter during the course of the year. There was a question which relates to the one which I responded to on the names of the CSOs that we grant funded. I indicated that we will be in a position to submit the list of the 88 CSOs. And there's another question which speaks to the COVID-19 stipends, which were earned by UIF learners before the March 2020 lockdown, which thus enables the learners to attend lectures for a 3-month period. I must indicate that during the lockdown, learners were not paid the normal stipends, but they received the stipends at the time when they were attending the classes before the lockdown, as per the agreement which we signed with UIF. However, what we did is that during the lockdown period, we made a special request to UIF to provide 3 months stipends to the learners during the lockdown for April to June 2020. And the stipends were later approved by the UIF. And then there was also a slide on CARA, which I think we need to correct the question in that it combines CARA and the volunteer program, the budgets for the two programs. The CARA program was meant to, is still meant to look at the issues, to address issues that are related to gender-based violence. And we still continue to implement the program according to the agreement, and the funding was for 95 million. We continue to implement the program, and we are almost at the end of implementation of the program. And that funding is solely meant for CARA. We had a funding for the volunteer program, which was not sourced from the CARA program. The volunteer program had its own funding, which we implemented, and we completed the first phase of the volunteer program from that particular funding. The current volunteer program is funded from the funding, which the 30 million funding, which we received from National Treasury through the PESP. So the two programs and the budgets are separate. They are not interlinked. I wanted to clarify that because the question seemed to combine or interlink the two programs, and yet they are two separate programs. And I think those are the questions that related to the performance information of the NTA. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, members, and CEO.
Thank you, Madam Khumalo. Can I ask Ngate Morule to deal with the turnaround strategy questions?
My apology, Chairperson, my apologies, Minister Zulu. I'm really just requesting that when the officials are answering the questions, can they try and be quick, please, guys, because the time is very short.
Okay, thank you, Minister. I take your guidance on answering these questions. I'll be very brief on the turnaround strategy in particular. We have already started in this current financial year gradually implementing the turnaround strategy. We have included in the APP four key deliverables and KPIs. One is on reconfiguring the NDA, particularly on the organizational structure. The process is already underway to source the services of a service provider to assist us in the reconfiguration process of the NDA. This is just to ensure that the NDA is configured in line with the business model and the proposed service delivery model of as proposed in the turnaround strategy. The second project is the digitization strategy of the NDA. And I've spoken about this, I think, when presenting on Wednesday. In particular, the NDA will be focusing on just its ICT architecture in broadly to ensure that it is configured in line with the turnaround strategy. The specifics that are coming from the turnaround strategy
that demands IT. First question.
Mr. Magongo, can you mute, please? So the question of the IT architecture that must mimic the turnaround strategy and the specific business model that is proposed for the NDA. So that's the second area in the APP that is already included. The third one is on the implementation, just the pilot implementation of the business model, the turnaround strategy in 9 districts. We've already started in 9 districts, different programs and projects that are being implemented to fully test, number one, the district model, the integration of services, development services in each of the districts that we have chosen, the localities that we have chosen, but also to embed the business model of the NDA in relation to skills development, in relation to grant funding as well. The last project that we are undertaking, seeking to implement the turnaround strategy gradually, relates to the partnership model, where we've already started engaging a number of different partners in relation to resource mobilization, but also where we have a common vision around development programs that are implemented on the ground. Having shared with all those development partners, whether it's in a government, in the private sector, and also civil society organizations, we have shared with them the contents of our turnaround strategy and what will underpin our work going forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone?
Yes, Chair. The last one in the group will be the internal audit executive, which will deal with the implementation of AG's findings. Thank you. Ms. Masur.
Thank you very much, Mr. Magongo. Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Ministers. My name is Hajra Mansour. I'm from the Internal Audit Unit of the NDA. I'll just share my video quickly because there is a problem with the network. Okay, in terms of the findings, NDA had 38 findings in the 1920 financial year. And in the 2020-21 financial year, the number of findings were reduced to 16. What internal audit does is we do a follow-up on all the recommendations by the AG to see whether management have implemented the recommendations. And during the first quarter, or during the third quarter of the financial year, of the current financial year, all the findings were actually resolved by management of the NDA. So from the 38, we were reduced to 16. And from 16 in the current financial year, we have 12 findings. And these findings are already in the process of being looked at and verified from internal audit to see whether management have actually responded to the implementation and the recommendations that AG have made. Thank you very much, Chair and colleagues.
Thank you very much. Mr. Magongo, are we done with your tip?
Yes, I just need to address few of the questions that related to investigation and misconduct. There are a couple of them. In terms of the investigations, including both the UIF project and the volunteer program. The UIF investigations is about to finish. I got the first draft yesterday. I'm still looking at it. And the volunteer program, they are just about to conclude the determination test, which is conducted by our internal audit function. When those are done, we'll then implement the recommendations that will come from all those reports relating to the people that would have been found to have caused those irregularities. And if there is any indication of criminality, we would have to refer that to the law enforcement agencies. And in terms of misconduct in general, we have an internal policy that deals with misconduct for recommendation that comes from any of the investigations that we do relating to either irregular expenditure or fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We currently, for most of our fruitless and wasteful expenditures, they are just due to people not showing up, and that money is recovered from staff. There's a policy that deals with recovery of losses at the NDA. For those that needs to go through a disciplinary processes, the human resource function is set now to actually respond to them, because in the cases that we are dealing with in the Loss Control Committee, which they have looked at 10 of the previous years, they've just concluded the 10 of the contracts of the previous year's irregular expenditure. There are staff that are still at the NDA that we have to now refer them for consequence management within our HR policy. And the questions that relates to the appointment of the board, the CEO, what I know, and I'm sure the DG and the minister will actually add on this at the end, is that the process for appointing the board is just at the end of it. And we might have a board very, very soon, weeks or just few weeks or a month. The CEO's process for appointment, we have to put the advert now because the board will be in place, which has the responsibility of recruitment of a permanent CEO. And the advert is already ready. It can go. We'll be putting up on the media for applications for the CEO. Once that is completed, then the NDA will have a full compliant a structure that deals with its governance and its accountability. I think those were the main issues, Chair, that we had. I'm not sure whether DG or Minister might want to say something around some of the issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Makongo. Can we then, as honorable members, note whatever that hasn't been answered, note it. Can we give over to SASSA?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Chair, because of the issue of time, I've already given guidance to the team as to who will respond to which issues, and they will do exactly that. We'll start with Brenton on grants. Thanks, Chair.
Good morning.
Thank you very much, CEO.
Good morning. Good morning, honorable Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members, Minister, CEO, DGs. I'm going to go straight into the questions. The first question we got was around are we going to use different EFT? What other EFT measures are we going to use for beneficiaries that don't have smartphones? Now, we as it's always been part of our system that we EFT money directly into beneficiaries' own bank accounts where they do have, or if a beneficiary wants to use their own bank account, we are able and capable of EFTing directly into their own bank accounts. That is the safest, the most convenient way, I think, for SASSA as well as the beneficiaries, is simply to give us their bank account details and we'll pay money directly into the bank account details. And the vast majority of our beneficiaries do choose this method. For those that don't provide us with their bank account, we do have an option that we're doing in partnership with the Post Bank, where they can then withdraw their money from merchants. You don't need a smartphone for this as well, but you do need to have a cell phone that can receive an SMS. And the SMS that you need to make sure that the cell phone you're using is the same, has the same SIM card in that you registered for the grant with, because we'll be sending an SMS to that number. And this often does cause quite a lot of challenge at merchants because people tend to change their cell phone numbers. And then when they draw the grants, they don't get those one-time pins that we send by SMSs. So that is important that if you do change your number, if you do get a new number, you've got to change your number on the SASSA system. It takes a bit of time for that then to update through to the Post Bank system. So you need to do that timelessly to ensure that you don't have too many challenges when you try and draw at merchants. In terms of awareness initiatives that around the child support grant top-up that was implemented. As mentioned, this uptake has been slow, but that is normally expected with all new grants that gets implemented. It takes a bit of time for society to become aware of the grant and for uptake to increase. In our regions, though, most of our regions have been undertaking various campaigns on the CSG top-ups, doing radio interviews with community radio stations, having various stakeholder engagements with local leadership as well as civil society organizations within the community. We also have various engagements also with government, key government departments like the Department of Social Development, who is probably our biggest feeder in terms of children who are potentially orphaned. And we also starting to have engagements now with the Some regions have already started, and others are getting on board this month with schools, as they may also be aware of students who are orphans, and we will also be having engagements with health. So this is an ongoing process, and if DSD National, and they probably speak to it when they come on a bit later, will also be, I think, in next week, be hosting sort of a national broadcast to all community radio stations as well on this, together with regular press releases and so on. We're also looking at a data approach to this by analyzing our data and trying to identify people, orphans who could be living with family members by doing various data extracts with SOPIN. We've also written to the Department of Home Affairs to see if they could assist us. And if that does work, we will also then try and implement a much more targeted approach to trying to reach out and market to potential beneficiaries for this grant. Then we had a question on the 6,800 SASSA cards that were found with foreign nationals. And the question was, how many migrants, asylum seekers are receiving funds, and what is our verification process? So you don't pay grants to migrants and normal social grants, normal old age child grants, disability grants to migrants and asylum seekers, as they would not qualify for these grants. Only refugees qualify for social grants and permanent residence. And currently we have roughly 6,500 refugees, adults, 6,500 refugees that are receiving social assistance. But for the SRD, the COVID SRD grant, that grant is available to asylum seekers as well. And I think we reached the number of about 15,300 asylum seekers that we've made that grant to. In terms of the verification process, these clients would go through exactly the same verification process South African that everyone else goes through. There's no special process for them, except that their identity is verified slightly differently. Well, not identified in the same way, it's just we use different documents. So for citizen, you'd use an ID document and ID number, and you verify it against the citizenship database of Home Affairs. And in the same way, refugee and asylum seekers are identified against the respective databases at Home Affairs. So essentially, Home Affairs is responsible for determining identities of people. And to a large extent, SASSA relies on Home Affairs for determining identity. I know there is a big issue that is being asked around the alternative document processes that we also have in place. And what we generally call them Quad Sevens. And this is potentially one area where fraud may creep in terms of our social assistance law, we cannot deny anybody a right to a social grant if they've been denied a right to identity. However, we do know that there could be potential abuses in the system. However, the numbers on these are also quite low. I think we have about 16,000 adults who get grants through this process. But of them, I think only about 1,000 or so are utilize the alternative benefit system. And then there's about 40,000 children that use this particular method. Then in terms of the question raised about let me come back to the AG question. There's a question around us not or taking far too long to finalizing grant applications. I think SASSA has consistently been meeting its target of processing 95% of applications in 5 days. Our biggest challenge, however, is around the COVID SRD grant, which crept in this year. as a result of us changing the system and having quite a lot of hurdles with getting the new system up to date. We initially started in June, so we were 3 months behind. We are catching up. I think we're now running only about 1 month behind. I think CEO mentioned in the last the portfolio committee meeting early in the week that we do currently have a challenge with the UIF and a database that we've not received since June. And we have now made a decision that the September payments we're not going to put on hold any longer, and that we're going to process them without the latest or most updated UIF database. And so I suppose that leads into the question around the AGs, or the questions raised around the AG, around the recommendation that we must recover money from ineligible grant recipients, and that we need to fix fix our inadequate databases. Now, I think the important context that we need to note here that it's especially in the digital context, which SRT, COVID SRT has taken us into. These databases, firstly, are not SASA databases. And I think the AG in his meeting with the portfolio committee members prior to our meeting made it very clear that SASA has a dependency on these external databases that we source from other sources. So it's not SASA's databases. SASA doesn't have control over these databases. It's not something that SASA can fix. But then also, I'm not putting blame on the UIF or SARS or anyone else who runs these databases, because it's not also something within their span or scope of being able to fix. So, for example, if I can make an example, I'm pretty sure many members here today probably have a domestic worker that works for them. If I were to ask you the question, are you paying UIF for your domestic worker? And if you are paying UIF for your domestic worker, are you keeping their records as an employer up to date on the UIF database? And many will probably say, no, you're not doing that. And it's not just individual employers, it's small businesses, it's medium businesses. We just yesterday got a request from one of the unions to say, can we help an enterprise who is not able to pay any of their workers, and they've never kept the UIF database records accurately on the system. Now their workers can't access UIF. And that was a factory with about 1,700 workers. Now, it's not UIF's fault that the UIF database is inaccurate. It's individual, it's society, it's small businesses, it's even medium businesses that are not necessarily always regularly and timeously updating their databases. Similarly, you know, even with Home Affairs, a lot of us come to us and say, I'm divorced, but they've never updated their status on Home Affairs, or they've got married and never updated their status on Home Affairs. So that does, when one does these digital checks, one has always got to recognize that, yes, the data is useful and we can use it, but we can only use it to a certain extent, because that data will never be accurate. I don't want to be pessimistic and say never, but it's reality that the data will never be accurate. People don't always update their data. And to some extent, so that's the key and the difficult decisions you need to make to decide, you know, to what extent can I use this data? I know the data has errors, but it's probably 99, maybe 95% accurate. And so I have to make decisions based on the data I have. And that leads me to the AGs question. This was the ongoing battle that we had with the AGs to say this was never going to be a perfect system. The Department of Social Development has now recognized that in the third iteration of the grant, where they actually use the word proxy means test, which clearly gives an indication that, you know, we're not expecting accuracy, because these databases are never going to be accurate. It's even when you look at the law that was written the first time, it was the best effort you could do with the data you had available to you. So if, for example, we were to implement the AG's recommendation, what that literally would mean is we would not pay a single social grant in 2020. Because even the AG took 2 to 3 years to collect all those databases. So if you were telling SASA you got to collect all the databases before you could have paid the grant, then we would have paid nothing. We would still be paying nothing because there's still databases there that even the AG hasn't collected. But we had to pay grants in 2020 based on the databases that we had available to us and make decisions on data that we had available to us at the time. Now we are in the process of saying, well, okay, now AG has collected all these databases additional, and looking at them. And to some extent, some of them have a handful of people in them. But we do have this challenge, and I think our Dr. Buller, when he speaks about the fraud matters, will come into a little bit more detail on this. You know, we have taken essentially what was implemented as a digital system, and we're now turning it into a physical system. Because if we're going to chase these handful of people, it's 5,000 public servants, total losses, potentially 5 million rand, which is like 0.001% of your total budget. You've got a handful of people in this department, a handful of people there. If one has to actively pursue all of those cases, what you've then essentially doing is taking a lot of resources out into essentially, you know, trying to put in place manual processes now to pursue very, very small amounts of people and very small amounts of money. But essentially, because we have an MI finding, this is now something we have to do. But it is going to take time. You know, the court processes are not going to run overnight. Court processes are slow processes. It's going to have huge impact on the organization as well. Essentially, we do the COVID SRD-19 grant with probably a handful of people. I would probably say less than 30 people because everything is done digitally. But now if you have to go, for example, if you have to take 5,000 people to court, that means 5,000 affidavits. That means 5,000 people have to go and testify in a court case against the, you know, when those hearings go to court. And if you only have maybe 20 or so people who are working in the system, you can imagine the kinds of backlogs you're going to create in the courts. So all of that, I think we do need to think a little bit differently how we're going to deal with those processes, or we basically just going to be creating a huge congestion of work within our court systems. Then we had a question around, I think I've responded to the databases. It is, okay, I'm going to leave the fraud questions to Dr. Buller. But I just want to make the sort of comment around, so there's a comment about there's increasing levels of fraud and how we're going to do what will be done to end fraud. I don't think fraud will ever end. Crime is a societal problem. And as long as SASA is an organization that manages money, we will always have someone that's going to be trying to defraud us. And hence, we need to build a strong and capable fraud unit and various anti-fraud systems in place to try and mitigate that as much as possible. But it's also, we also need to find the right balance, because another question that was asked, or I think I've responded to already, is, you know, you want us to be more efficient and more effective and be able to pay people very quickly. And so that there's kind of a balance between the two that one has to strike, because it's the, if you think of it like a house, if you the more security and everything you put into the house, the harder it is to get into the house. People will still find ways to break in and get into your house, and then you put more security up, you put more fences, etc. But all of that then also then begins to compromise service delivery, because then it takes longer for legitimate people who want to get in. The process for them to get in becomes a lot more difficult. And so one then has to try and find the right balance to what is sort of an acceptable level of fraud that you can tolerate with a strong arm that says, when it's discovered, we go after you, and we go after you quite aggressively, and not necessarily have too much obstacles that prevents the flow of people from legitimate people, who are probably 99% of your population anyway. Are honest people, and you don't want to necessarily subject them do a whole range of anti-fraud checks just because you want to try and root out that half a percent or so that we are going to be trying to defraud. Although, like I said, obviously one has to find a balance with that. And not in any way suggesting we must lighten up our systems to any to an extent where we just allow everyone in. What will SASSA be doing I think the last question is about our plan for the current COVID SRD and the delays that we currently have. As mentioned earlier on, we've got this delay that has set us back with the September payments, but as we've mentioned, we've now made a decision. And again, that will become a difficult decision when we have a discussion with the AG as to why we are now going to use a UIF database that is going to be outside of our rules of being not more than 2 months old, but now it will be 3 months old. And that's simply, what do we do if we don't have a database, if a particular organization is not supplying it to us? Do we not pay grants, or do we still continue? And we believe that the law says it doesn't say we must use UIF. It says we must use the databases and data that we have available to us. And so if it's not available, we believe we can still go ahead and make the payments. So we're going to make the September payments. We're going to run them this weekend. I know we made a commitment to run them last weekend, but we were kind of holding out, hoping that UIF would provide that database to us. That didn't happen. And now we're going to go ahead and we're going to make that payment. And then that will set us off. So if we did stick to doing that last week, we would have done October by the end of this month, and then we would be up to date. But now, because we did have a slight setback and we didn't necessarily do the runs last week, doing it this week means we're only going to do October in November. But hopefully then in November, we'll do October and November, and we'll be up to date with the system. There are a few other errors or issues that we needed to go back and do some reruns from the April to July. But once we're up to date, we'll then go back and do all of that. I think the key lesson here or our key plea from the agency side is that it's very difficult to build and implement systems in a short space of time. So our plea is that, if this grant does get extended again next year, that we do get time in. Ideally, one would want at least 6 months notice. Many of the systems we run are dependent on us issuing multi-million rand tenders. And it's not easy to issue tenders of that size and nature in a space of weeks. One does need a good couple of months to do those procurement processes and to ensure that we can. And also, it's not also feasible to run such huge tenders for short periods like 6 months or a year. And so we do hope that when the decision is taken that we will have, at least a multi-year period, so a two-year or three-year period, that would make it a lot easier to be able to develop systems. So again, it's very difficult to plan if one isn't certain, am I planning for 3 months, am I planning for a year, am I planning for 3 years? Thanks, honorable members. CEO.
Thank you very much, Brenton. Can you come in and speak? Yes, ma'am.
Is there anyone who's following?
Yes, their prime chair is Dr. Lenani Vila, who's going to speak to the issues related to fraud and will be followed by the CFO. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, committee members, Honorable Minister, CEO, DG, and colleagues. My questions are only three. Then the first question talks to the issue around fraud detection system to see whether we have procured a system or not. What happened, Chairperson, is that before we could go out on procurement of the system, we needed to conduct a fraud pattern analysis. And out of such analysis, we identified that all fraud detection requirements which were necessary for us to have strategic competitive advantage in reduction of fraud within SASSA can be done through our business intelligence system, which is an in-house system. And we are currently using the very same business intelligence system, and it is actually giving us positive spin-offs in terms of detection of fraud. We have just detected 87 grants in the Eastern Cape and managed to stop those. And in the Western Cape, again, there is an issue around the twins which were detected. So basically, it is very effective to that effect. So we didn't procure any system externally. We're using an internal system. Then the second question, which is very critical, talk to the public servants who benefited from our grant. What we are doing, Chairperson, is mainly to look into the three areas. The first area being the question of disciplinary actions as well as loss recovery. And we also concentrate on referring these matters for criminal prosecution. To date, what we have done is to communicate with all departments which are affected, wherein those public servants are working, informing them that there are this number of public servants, and we have requested them to assist in terms of disciplinary as well as loss recovery, but with specific reference to criminal prosecution, we have referred 628 matters for further investigation and prosecution. But we can even put it on record, Chairperson, that we are very much resolute on this issue, mainly on the issue of criminal referral, because we work in a multidisciplinary approach with the NPA and SAPS to ensure that we secure successful prosecution in this regard. So basically, before the end of the financial year, we will have found more traction in terms of referring these matters for prosecution. But as I've indicated, on the issue of disciplinary and loss recovery, we depend mainly on the affected department to assist since these employees are within their province. I thank you for now. Thank you.
Come through, CFO. Thanks.
Thank you very much, CEO. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, Minister, and DG and the CEOs. I'll deal with a number of questions that relate to my area of responsibility. There was a question that we were asked to say, what is the delays in resolution of disciplinary procedures due to employee departures, and why criminal charges not brought against employees who are not in service since they do not require disciplinary action? We do lay criminal charges for any employee that is no longer in the employment of the agency if there are elements of criminality. SASSA only considers laying criminal charges only when there are criminal elements, and also consider legal proceedings where SASSA has suffered losses. So in that instance, we do follow that process. But in a case where there is no criminal elements or we have not suffered any losses, it is just a mere financial non-compliance, we could have only done that by disciplinary process. But generally, if we have not lost anything, and then we'll consider, in case of irregular expenditure, you can condone such an expenditure if there are no losses. There was a question that was asked also relating to, say, the underachievement on lease agreement. These leases do not expire on overnight, so the department has acted negligently. What controls and monitoring measures are in place to ensure that if agreements expire, that engagement and alternative plans are in place? I can confirm that, yes, honorable members, there was a gap in terms of contract management. On realization of that gap, we implemented what we call immovable property management module on ERP, on Oracle. This module has been activated for the past 2 years. And it has captured all leases that from head office we can have an oversight and overview of every lease that we have in the organization. And this is monitored monthly. However, there were cases that have already expired at the time of implementation of this module. And that is the reason why you will see that we reported irregular expenditure on the leases. So the cases where the leases have expired, we are currently in the process of procuring, and we're requesting the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure to do the procurement on behalf of SASA, and we are waiting that process to be concluded. Once it's concluded, then we'll have dealt with this. Secondly, we also now started to request the Department of Public Works to procure leases 14 months before the expiry of a lease, so to give the Department of Public Works enough time to start the procurement process, so which we believe that this will be able to curtail any risk of irregular expenditure. There was also a question, Honorable Chair, that was asked, which was to say, how many of the recommendations of the AG issued last year that we did not implement, and how many did we not implement, and why? We did receive 71 findings, and we reviewed the recommendation of the AG, and that is what has informed the SASA audit action plan. 66 out of the 71 recommendations were finalized, which translates to 93%. There were only 5 which were work in progress, and one was the finalization of irregular expenditure for the cases that have been long outstanding. And in that, the issue why we did not finalize on that is because some of the cases take time to investigate, but some of the cases are complex in nature. Some it was because of the delay. So we could not finalize the cases which were long outstanding. The second one was the issue around the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which we needed to have completed in. And we did actually 63% of that. And the main reason was because of some of the cases are in the court and some of the further investigation. And that is the reason why we could not have finalized that. The third one that was not finalized was the lack of external quality assurance assessment of the internal audit function. Normally, every 5 years, an internal audit function of a department or an entity need to be reviewed by an external person. And what we did is because we could not finalize it, I think 3 times we have attempted to procure the service of a service provider to do the external quality assessment. In all those 3 times, we found that the bids were non-responsive. What we have done now was to engage National Treasury to assist us to prepare for the external assessment. I can confirm that even yesterday, I had an interview with an appointed team from National Treasury. They have started with the process of assisting SASA to prepare for the external assessment, which will be done once Treasury has guided on that. The fourth one was the issue of the network security. We could not conclude on this because there are a number of projects that needed to be implemented within the ICT environment. And that will require not only 1 year, I think a couple of years. And that's the reason why we could not. So we have opted for a phased in. The last one, I think, is what actually the EM grants, Mr. Frank Trader has already spoken about, which has to do with the issue of the 350. I think he has covered that, Chair. I don't want to repeat that. There was a question also, Honorable Chair, that was saying that please provide feedback regarding the status of the investigation into the financial misconduct, and if finalized, the actions taken to address material irregularities through implementation of relevant actions taken against all implicated and recoveries were appropriate. I could, Honorable Chair, refer the members to slide 37 and 38. I think I will just paraphrase it for the sake of time. We did report there in that slide that we have finalized 829 cases of the 937 cases that were available at the closure of the year 2020-2021. So when we opened for the year 21-22, we had 937 cases. And of those 937 cases, 829 were finalized. That translates to 88%. And what we have done in that regard is that I can confirm that we were able to finalize 95% of irregular expenditure cases that were at the opening balance, so which was the 730 cases. So within the 829, 730 cases related to irregular expenditure, 24 cases relate to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and 75 cases relate to damages and losses. I think if you were to compare our performance in the year 2021 and our performance for the year 21-22, the honorable members will be able to notice a significant increase in the resolution of the cases. So when we closed the year, we had a residual number of cases. 108 cases were not finalized. And these cases, Honorable Chair, should be finalized during the course of 2022-23. I can confirm that of those cases of 730, 221 cases are currently with Treasury for condemnation. And we believe that Treasury will be able to finalize those condemnations before the end of the financial year. In terms of resolving that area, I think we are on top of it. And as management, given the marching orders given by the honorable members, we have made concerted effort around that area. There was a question, Honorable Chair, that where consequence management applied against officials found to have contravened procurement processes? If not, why? I did indicate in the previous response that we have taken action in relation to those cases. So I don't need to really repeat that. But what I can confirm is that in a case of supply chain management processes contravene and a transaction becomes irregular, National Treasury will not condone such a transaction or an expenditure unless National Treasury is satisfied that the corrective and preventative measures that have been considered by the agency are deemed to be appropriate. Only then will Treasury satisfy themselves and condone the transactions. So Treasury demands that we must explain what has been the corrective measures that we have put in place before they consider that. There was a question, Honorable Chair, that says, what will the entity be doing to ensure they foster a culture of consequence management as it continues to be?
10 minutes left, ne?
I'll just summarize, Chair. So what this is are the issues that we are implementing. There are about two main issues that we are implementing. One is to improve the turnaround to finalize cases of alleged misconduct. So I have already indicated the efforts that we have made in this regard to make sure that the turnaround is improved in finalizing the corrective disciplinary processes. Two is for us to implement the preventative measures within the SCM environment. And the following issues have already been implemented. One is that we have already reviewed the SCM policy and procedures. Two, we have already trained all the BID committees, BID education committees across the organization, which is 9 regions and head office. Three, we have already started with the pre-audit of all tender awards before they are awarded by using the SCM compliance unit and internal audit. The last question that I needed to comment on is the question that says, during the presentation, the CFO stated the inspectorate will bring much needed capacity to SASA. Is the inspectorate not independent from SASA and DSD? I can confirm that the inspectorate is independent from DSD and SASA. However, SASA will be able to refer all in cases of fraud to the inspectorate for investigation, just like SASA is currently doing, referring cases to SIU or any law enforcement agency. I think that's probably summarizes what the response. Oh, there's a question that said, why does SASA not transfer all lease agreements to DPWI? Is the regular expenditure from leases held by SASA or DPW? It is confusing. I can confirm that the regular expenditure is the leases that are current with SASA. SASA has 659 leases. 113 of these leases are with Public Works, and the rest of the leases are in the hands of SASA, which amounts to 546 leases. What are we doing in terms of that? One, we have prioritized the procurement of the expired leases. So we moved actually from 25 expired leases. Currently, we're sitting with 17, with the assistant of the Department of Public Works and the Department of Social Development. Two, we are currently reviewing the policy on immovable property management policy. And three, we are already improving the contract management issues. Thank you very much, Chair. I hope that I have not skipped any. If there is any, the CEO will remind me. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. There's no one else, Chair, except me that is I'm going to respond to one particular issue that was asked by Honorable Masang with regards to the 316 million and the 74 million for which we actually received a material irregularity. If the members may remember, the 316 was subjected to court proceedings, and we felt at the time that it was prudent for us as an agency to get a sense in terms of what the court proceedings are, where they were going to end up before we can start with the forensic investigation. The 74 million was also a process that was on litigation in terms of the service provider that it was being litigated. And we have since started the forensic investigations on both, after having received the MI from the AG, and we only received the reports, Chair, last week on the 11th, in terms of the draft report had been sent to us earlier on the 11th of July for the 74 million. We held a meeting with the institution that is actually helping us with the forensic investigation that has been sourced by National Treasury. We have since received the supplementary report on the 2nd of October, and we are considering together with our audit committee, both reports, and the meeting is going to be held in the next week so that we can finalize the report and make sure that these issues are finalized as soon as possible. Chair, I wanted to respond to those, which would be the last question on our side, and want to thank you, Chair, for giving us the opportunity to respond to these. DG, I want to hand over to you.
Thank you very much, CEO. Remember, honorable members, I requested to you that if there are any questions that haven't been answered, let's note those and forward them again. Because now we're left with 5 minutes, then I'll give over to the minister to just summarize all what we have done today. Otherwise, thanks ever so much. But before that, can I check with honorable members that they have noted all the questions that haven't been touched, and they can forward those questions again to Yoli or secretary, because we don't want to leave stones unturned. We want every question to be answered in a very, I will say, perfect way. But you know what I'm having in mind is that Mr. Brandon has tried to explain what is supposed to happen in terms of the cards, the SASSA cards. This is really a challenge. I just want to pose the question of saying, do you think this thing of making new cards in rural areas is going to be successfully done, knowing that in rural areas there are no banks, and also Post Bank is always having challenges of saying they don't have cards with them. I don't know, but I'm stuck with that in here in the Eastern Cape. Can we then ask the minister to summarize all what we have done or what we have managed to get from the department and the officials from NTA and SASSA? Minister, are you still around?
I am, Chairperson. I am here, and I'm also following the chat room there. I see an Honorable Abraham says she's been waiting for questions for the past 2 weeks. I'd like the DG just to take a few moments to respond in whatever he thinks necessary to respond to, but also to this question that Abraham says she's been waiting for 2 weeks. And also, I'd like to also say, Chair, there is the other process of questions. Right now, in front of me, I've got piles and piles of questions that we do the best to answer those questions. Those questions have to come through me. I have to read all those questions. I have to note those questions. I have to write down those questions, because we take this portfolio committee very seriously. We don't undermine anybody. We don't undermine anything. When we respond, we are responding because we genuinely want to continue to have this robust engagement with the portfolio committee. So maybe let the DG answer quickly.
Thank you, Minister. Over to you, DG. The 2 weeks
thank you very much,
that have been posed, no answer to them.
No, thanks very much, Honorable Chair. I think I think I made reference to this on Wednesday when in the portfolio committee, and I had indicated that in terms of our knowledge, we have responded to all questions, and I have suggested that if we could get the questions from the secretary, we will gladly process them again. But in terms of the records that we have, we've responded to all questions. But we're happy that if we can get them today, we'll make sure that we're able to still process them today still. Those questions, unless they're new questions, honorable members. If there are new questions, then our commitment is that we'd be able to respond to them by next week. But in terms of our records, I think we've responded. But in that case, we're happy that we can receive them again and reprocess them again. If we get them today, we'll process them back today. And if we get them, if there are new questions, then by next week, early next week, Monday, Tuesday, at the latest, you'll have them. Thank you very much, Minister and Honourable Chair.
Honourable Abrams, are you with us?
I'm with you. Thank you, Chair. I'll double check with Lindiwe, but I do send it via... Thanks, Chair, and thank you to the ADG and the Minister.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. If I may, through you, I wish to thank the portfolio committee members always for the questions and always for the cordial working relations that we have. And for me, Chairperson, honestly, when we get questions, I try also to get the department to respond. Sometimes the questions, obviously, sometimes they get delayed by my side because I've got these other 1,001 things that one need to cover, and I need to make sure that the questions are signed off, because I have to sign off the questions. I try by all means to sign them off on time. Maybe sometimes there might be a delay here and there. It's not because of anything, because I do understand and I do appreciate that it's my executive authority to make sure that members get the questions back, and it's my executive authority to make sure that we respond to the portfolio committee in the best way that, that we can. I wanted to make a suggestion, Chairperson, that maybe in the future, when we have to deal with these reports in particular, because it takes a bit of time, maybe we might want to split them up, maybe have two in a day and then one separate one, because I do understand for the members, even for myself, when I have to go through all these reports of SASSA, of NDA, it's quite a lot to go through these reports. We need to just try and find another way maybe that can enable that we don't have to have what has happened here when we have to then come back again and answer to the questions. We might maybe try and be creative. I know that the time for the portfolio committee is also members. It's also not easy to have too many meetings, but I appreciate it's just a request so that it enables the members to ask us as much questions as they want, because they are a reflection of the work that they do on the ground as far as they are doing their oversight is concerned. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister and honorable members, for attending the meeting. That was, I will say, urgently organized. And also thanks for the officials for their responses to the committee. Then we promised that the meeting will be finished by 10:30. Now, when I'm looking at the time, it's going to 25 to 11. So can I request honorable members and officials to please we close the meeting. So the meeting has adjourned. We will hear for others. Thank you very much.
Bye. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister. And the department.
Enjoy yourselves. Yeah. Don't forget to write.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Bye.
And you, Chair, don't forget what the minister have said. It's what I'm looking for. Always, I wanted what the minister have just alluded now, that we must offload those things. So you must also digest it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, my Honorable Jane. What we will do is to look at the program and maybe adjust it in some way, somehow, though we are still await for the workshop that we have requested. We're still looking for a chance and a space in the program. So we'll also do a search to this one. Thank you ever so much, everyone. Lioli, thanks.